Matt Robeson, Beyond Politics. And today, former Congressman and former prosecutor Paul Hodes walks us through one of the most important jury selection processes ever, with the jury panel coming together and then falling apart in New York. And we ask, what impact will having two lawyers on the jury have? And is the Biden White House taking the right approach politically by staying totally silent about the trial? Also, we cover the sham Mayorkas impeachment. It's over. Did it matter? What does it say? And is Mike Johnson actually doing a good job leading the House of Representatives on this Ukraine aid package? Hint, two out of the three members of our panel think the answer is yes. And finally, you're going to want to hang on for a wild story at the end. And I mean that kind of literally, that involves escaped zoo animals and a huge metaphor for politics in America. Here we go. All right, let's bring the latest, which of course will not be the latest by the time the show gets out in terms of the Trump trial. It's been an eventful week. A lot of the focus has been on jury selection. Let's take advantage of your experience as a prosecutor, Paul. Talk a little bit about the jury selection dynamics. So the latest here is that we were up to seven jurors who had been selected for the Trump trial. We're now down to five because two have been dismissed. What's the update there? I'm literally just seeing this.
One of the jurors apparently expressed concern that her identity may have been compromised by some information that was released, making it possible to identify her out in public. It's the reason why judges and court administrators are always very careful about jurors' anonymity. The jurors, of course, can say things, even innocently, that helps that get out and put things together. This is an especial concern in this trial because, look, it's as we were talking about a little bit before we went on the air, so to speak, this is a mob trial. This is a mob boss, and he's already threatened to whack people in various ways.
So let me just ask, is that a normal thing that you protect jurors' anonymity in all trials, or is that a particular thing that's being applied here?
It's up to the judge to figure out exactly what protections and how he wants to, how the judge who controls the courtroom and court does the proceedings is going to protect jurors. Generally, jurors are given protection. They're told not to talk about anything that happens inside the courtroom when they get outside. And that's why you always see nothing generally in the press from jurors during a trial. And then afterwards, jurors may be interviewed. Mm. That's juror number one. Juror number two, I can't give you details about that. Apparently, juror number two didn't show up, was called in, came in. The transcripts are sealed. There's some speculation about why that second juror was dismissed.
Maybe it caught up with them. It's, oh my gosh, my life is going to be over after this.
That's right. They have had the same kind of concerns. because, look, Trump has been pretty shameless about calling on his acolytes and to wreak violence. And he himself has sat in the courtroom. Apparently, reports are looking at jurors in ways to intimidate them. He's doing everything a mob boss would do.
Right.
And perhaps more, because he's such an idiot in some ways that he's been overt about who he's threatened. He threatens the prosecutor, he threatens the judge, he threatens the judge's daughter. Far be it from anybody to think that he wouldn't go after jurors or have people go after jurors. The whole atmosphere is crazy.
Not to be flip about it, but it reminds me a little bit about the advice that I gave a good friend of mine in sixth grade when he asked out a girl for the first time, which is you got to get a yes from her and you got to make plans before she has a chance to go home and talk to her friends. Because at that point, you're cooked. Because if the friends suddenly say, ew, you're going out with so-and-so, then the next day you get the, hey, I've got to go wash my hair at my grandma's house excuse, which is what happened to my friend. And it does feel like this is perhaps a juror who came home, said to the spouse, guess what happened today, honey? And the spouse was like, no, don't do that. That's horrible. Just don't.
And let's not forget, said juror may have woken up to news this morning that Donald Trump tweeted out a Jesse Waters from Fox News that said two liberals have infiltrated the jury. Okay. How is that not, I don't know what the legal term is, but intimidating, tampering, anything, the jury.
Tortious interference.
It's outrageous. If I were on that jury and woke up and realized that Jesse Waters just called the mob out on me, I'd peace out too.
It's jury interference. It's what mob bosses and their acolytes do. In this case, the mob boss, Trump, happens to have a big megaphone called Fox News, and they're all in. And it's a, we've used the word unprecedented many too many times. You've got the former president of the United States, and from my point of view, a hopefully soon to be convicted criminal thug calling out for violence and intimidation, as he has done repeatedly.
So, Paul, when you have tried to, as a prosecutor, when you've been part of jury selection, what would do you make of the fact that, two questions for you. What are you looking for, besides like someone who's secretly in the bag for me? And what do you make of the fact that two lawyers have ended up as part of this jury?
Okay, first question. The first thing I'm looking for, and this is not necessarily in order of priority. One, I'm scrutinizing the answers to questionnaires very closely. I want to make sure there's nothing on paper that in my view, immediately disqualifies a juror. I am looking for somebody who's fair and impartial as a prosecutor. There's no guarantee. I can't guarantee what their background has been or where they've come from, or even what their views may be. They may have certain political views. In addition to looking at the answers to questionnaires, I'm asking questions of jurors, and I'm, as a person, using my common sense and ability to just, what's the smell test? How do they look? How do they sound? Where do they hesitate? Are their eyes flickering left and right? And is their tongue coming out when they answer a question?
Yeah, but that's me at baseline.
Yeah,
The lawyer issue here? Because the scuttlebutt among the talking heads is this might be advantage Trump because lawyers as part of the jury might be more open to technical legal arguments that the defense will offer as exculpatory, essentially. What do you make of that?
I think it's interesting. Lawyers are trained to, in a linear fashion, examine the facts as they come and fit them carefully to the law. I don't know what kind of lawyers these are. Are they trial lawyers? Are they real estate lawyers?
One's a litigator.
Yeah.
We know
okay.
that.
So they are trained to scrutinize the facts and the evidence very closely. If I'm a prosecutor in this case, I don't mind if they're lawyers because, frankly, given what I know about the evidence and given that so much of this evidence relies on corroborating documentation to whatever testimony I'm going to hear from the witnesses like Michael Cohen, et cetera, and how clear the law in this case is about the falsification of business records, in this case, for a nefarious purpose. I can't imagine why the defense didn't exercise what are called peremptory challenges. Each side gets 10 peremptory challenges, i.e. to be able to dismiss a juror for any reason. And you'll remember that Trump tweeted the other night, hey, we only got 10, we're supposed to be unlimited. Wrong, Donald, you don't know what the law is. And the judge can excuse any juror for cause. So the lawyers must have answered in an appropriate way about their ability to put aside anything and listen to the facts and evidence as it comes into the courtroom. And I would say that as I have a strong predisposition about this case, I'm a lawyer. If I was in that jury pool, I would not be able to say truthfully, I can be fair and unbiased, because I have a strong predilection to wanting to see this guy in an orange jumpsuit for as long as possible until he caves over and dies.
Well, can I just throw a wrinkle in here? Because I've had an experience as a prospective juror, if not in that exact courtroom, at least in an adjacent one, when I was called as part of a jury pool. Now, this was a while ago. This was actually a couple decades ago. Although, look, it's New York infrastructure, so I guarantee it hasn't changed a lot. And my experience was, it's much like what, if you're reading any coverage about this, they're giving something that is very true to my experience. Whole big group of us brought in, fill out a questionnaire, right? And then it happened to me twice. In one case, I got to the lawyer's voir dire process, which we've all seen that happen in that documentary, My Cousin Vinny, where the lawyers ask prospective jurors questions. And in this case,
Ute.
Yes, I was one of the Utes at the time. And in this case, it was particularly interesting because I definitely did not want to be seated. So I gave truthful answers. I will say now, please don't come after me, New York State authorities. I gave truthful answers that also happened to lean toward probably prosecutors not wanting me to be part of this jury, because they said, the lead attorney, the lead prosecutor said, okay, this is an armed robbery case. It hinges on eyewitness testimony. What do you think about that? And I said, I don't put a lot of weight on eyewitness testimony because studies have shown that people's memories are easily distorted, and they've done experiments. I probably polluted the whole damn jury pool that day. They've done experiments where they show that memories are extremely unreliable. So then the lawyer did something weird. She had been dressed with this kind of started day one, and then I was getting asked the questions the next morning. She said, she wanted to push me on this for some reason. She said, do you remember, for example, what outfit I was wearing yesterday? And here's the thing. She was a woman in her, I'd say, mid-50s, who had been dressed all in leather the previous day. I'm not sure why that was appropriate in this courtroom, but apparently the judge was cool with it.
But it was memorable.
It was extremely memorable. And so I said, yes. And she said, how would you describe my outfit yesterday? And I said, it was black. And she said, and what was it made of? And I'm like, are we going here? Are you really going to make me do this? And I said, and she said, and what about the boots? Thigh high leather boots. And I was like, yes, those
as
well.
I'm giving this lady props. I'm willing to bet she did that on purpose.
Why are we going here? This isn't good for you and it isn't good for me. But anyway, that was the deal. That was my experience.
I'm willing to bet she did that on purpose so she could do that exercise to prove her point, because she wanted to give credibility to eyewitness accounts.
Maybe it was to counteract my poisoning of the jury pool there. But yes, probably. But anyway, that was my experience. It was very much like the reports we're reading here. The second time around, the judge conducted the questions, and she was very no-nonsense. She was one of these, if you ever see one of these courtroom dramas, she was like one of these no-nonsense judges. And it was very like, can you be fair and impartial? Is there any reason you can't participate, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Let's take a break. We'll be right back.
The other interesting thing is, going back to your question about lawyers, it may be that juries end up sequestered in a room after the trial, and they elect some person as the foreperson. And who knows, perhaps somebody's thinking, okay, one of these lawyers is going to end up as the foreperson of this jury. And both sides thinking, okay, we'll have somebody who's trained to look carefully at the facts of the law. One of the things that sent me to law school back in 1975 was I served on a jury in that same courthouse. And it was a civil case, not a criminal case, but it was an extraordinary experience for me in terms of dealing with the facts and the evidence back in the jury room with my fellow jurors, who all had very different recollections of what exactly the facts were about some of the critical pieces of evidence that had been introduced. Anyway, that was a fascinating experience. But that goes on in every trial. And in this case, we now have five jurors. Assuming they stay, we're still doing pretty well. We got to get to 12 jurors, and then we got to get to alternates. So we have today and tomorrow. And opening arguments, hopefully, are going to start Monday or Tuesday.
I'd like to bring in Alicia's expertise on a different angle. Oh, wait, did you want to say something on that? I assume it's about leather outfits.
It is. And I'm going to go change for put mine on for next show. But anyway, what's interesting about this, and I don't know why this is the case, the foreman's already chosen. Juror number one will be the foreman. And I am completely giggling about the fact that the juror number one, who will be a foreman, is an immigrant.
Oh, delicious. I didn't
know he's
I,
from Ireland. He's not one of the quote unquote shithole nations. Unfortunately, that would have been
one of
even
the countries
better.
That Trump but, considers okay.
Yeah, but he's still an immigrant, and I still get a kick out of that. I just do.
That is a delightful nugget. Hey, let me run this delightful nugget by you. Politico pined this morning a little bit on what they call the hush little baby, don't say a word strategy from the White House. And essentially, the approach that the Biden White House is taking is, it's like the old political adage, if you're, I don't know, this is gruesome, but it's, if your opponent is hanging themselves, keep feeding them rope. Don't get in the way if your opponent is going through some bad stuff. Just let it happen. So they're not commenting at all on the Trump trial so far. And the theory here is, first of all, it avoids any hint of interference, any appearance, giving any weight to Trump's, oh, it's a witch hunt, they're weaponizing government against me. And then the second idea is, yeah, let Trump's hurting himself, let him keep going. Like, we don't need to add anything here. And then third, it's, hey, this, let's just keep pivoting to better material for us electorally, like abortion and abortion. What do you make as a communications professional of their strategy?
Oh, it's the right strategy. It's the right strategy for several reasons. First and foremost, what you first said, if Biden or his people standing in for him, his surrogates or whatnot, supporters, start publicly talking about what's happening with the day-to-day antics at the Trump trial, then it can be, there can be an argument made that if he's using that in the process of an election, that it's there for election interference. And that plays right into the hands of Trump and MAGA. More importantly, it's leading the news far more than even what's going on in the House of Representatives, which is significantly more important today than Trump's jury pool picking. But it's leading the news everywhere. If people are paying attention to anything, they're seeing the Trump trial stuff. So you don't have to, which means you can stay positive, which means you can go as Biden is today and getting the endorsement of 12 members of the Kennedy family, which means you can go get the endorsement of, I forget who it was, the auto workers or someone recently, a union anyway. So he can just get out there, get endorsements, hold speeches, talk about the stuff he claims he's done that's good, and keep it positive. So for several reasons, I think they're, from a communication standpoint, they're 100% correct. And they don't need to touch it and they shouldn't touch it.
I'm sure there will be a lot more grist for this mill, but let's move on. I want to touch really briefly, and I do mean briefly because it's probably all it deserves, on the Mayorkas impeachment that never really happened. He was impeached in the House in a partisan stunt, and then the Democratic-led Senate promptly dismissed it by finding it unconstitutional as an impeachment, just deeming it. Basically, the translation was, this is bullshit, we're done. And there was a little bit of storming about it. Mitch McConnell took to the Senate floor, and I guess he was reverting to his baseline. It's the old adage, if the law's on your side, talk about the law. If the facts are on your side, talk about the facts. And if neither the law nor the facts are on your side, pound the table. And that's essentially what he did. Is there any take home from this really tragic episode?
I don't think anyone paid attention to it.
I don't think it's gotten much public attention at all. It's another example of the bankrupt Republican Party refusing to do anything real except snivel and swivel around. This never did rise to the level of a high crime and misdemeanor. This is a policy dispute. Policy disputes are not grounds for impeachment. The only negative out of this whole thing is, and depending on how you see negatives and positives, in the long term, it sets a bad precedent of somebody being impeached on a policy question. That's bad for the country, no matter which party you're in. It should never have happened. And it's just another strike against the bankrupt Republican control of the U.S. House of Representatives.
I think what's really especially stupid and galling about it is the fact that I would actually welcome, and I think most Americans would welcome, an actual debate on, okay, we're upset about what's going on at the southern border and about our immigration policy. And I would welcome a discussion, a give and take, a debate where, let's say we had someone who truly believed that we should end all amnesty and put up a wall, let's say. And they firmly believe that on policy grounds. That is the way to go. And I would love to have them on this show with me and with Alicia Preston, who is more of a balanced view, but conservative on immigration, not to put words and positions in your mouth, Alicia, but that is how you come across to me. I think that a debate like that in an actual government body, not as part of a podcast, would be useful. And it would get somewhere. And in fact, we had an actual bill that enacted mostly Republican policies on immigration. And Republicans killed it because Trump told them to. And this was what we got in its stead, a performative stunt. The only other thing I'll say is that our old friend, Michael Gerhardt, who is the world-leading authority on the U.S. impeachment process, he was our guest 2 months ago talking about this. He was interviewed and said that he thinks that the corrective for this is the old sunlight is the best disinfectant. And he points to the fact that there should be a political price to pay for these kinds of things appearing on TV. I have a contrarian take on that. I think that in this case, the fact that this stuff is on TV creates a perverse incentive for performative politics. I think that C-SPAN is bad. I do. I don't think that it's creating sunlight. I think it's creating an incentive for basically politicians to mug for the camera and to pull stunts like this in hopes of getting a little clip, getting a little something viral, and having it be on TV or on video these days. And that's what it's for. And that's all that it's for. And I think if we didn't have stuff on TV, there'd be less of an incentive for it.
I think that's a terrible thing to say, because all I ever wanted was my own TV show. And the only way I could get it was by getting elected to Congress and getting on C-SPAN at midnight
to talk
about the virtues of the Constitution and to rant and rave. And I was a C-SPAN star. So anybody who speaks against the network that featured me is just out of order.
Alicia, you realize that you and Paul are agreeing, but he's being tongue-in-cheek and you are not.
Here's why I agree. Particularly,
wait, you agree with him or with me?
No.
Tell me you agree with me.
I agree with him, right, even if he's being sarcastic. The reason is because even in today's world in particular, but I would say always, I think the right to a transparent government is important. And more importantly today, no one's going to believe what media reports was done unless they see it with their own eyes. They don't believe it if they see it with their own eyes half the time.
Oh, welcome to the age of deepfakes, my friend.
They're certainly not going to believe it if it's reported by media. And that goes to the left and the right. Ah, Fox News said that. That can't be real. Ah, CNN said that. That can't be real. So we have this massive distrust of the Fourth Estate unless what they're reporting fits our agenda. And we have to have the video to see it with our own eyes.
Fair. Although that will no longer be true as soon as AI figures out deepfakes in a real way and gets across the uncanny valley. However, I just think that in Washington, D.C., let's take someone from my own party just so that we can be fair and balanced about this. Let's take Chuck Schumer. Let's say I set up a camera on a street corner. It would be about 3 minutes before Chuck Schumer was in front of that camera singing and dancing like a monkey. And so I think that the incentive of being on TV, like Paul was just lampooning a moment ago, is bad for our politicians. Our politicians have the emotional level of about a three-year-old. They like to mug and make funny faces for the camera, which is essentially all that C-SPAN is. And that's all that this impeachment was. We're moving on. I'm taking the final word on this. We're not defending you and your performative antics.
Folks, you have just witnessed the mentality of the average staffer in Congress, that the staff is in control of everything, and that they are there to tell the member of Congress what to say, how to say, when to say, and that the member of Congress is simply a puppet in the hands of people like Matt Robeson. I rest my case.
I would give you the case of Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the former eminent member of the House of Representatives and your friend, Paul, who many times appeared on the House floor in various states of exotic dress to celebrate victories for her sports teams. She would not do this time-wasting crap if it weren't on TV. And I love you, Debbie. I truly do. Okay, let's move on.
I agree with your time-wasting crap when it comes to Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
See, we're getting somewhere. See, this is progress, people. This is what progress looks like in America in 2024. Oh, gosh, I'm depressed. Okay. Speaking of depressing, Mike Johnson, what the hell? Okay, I'm beginning to get a little confused. This is like a Game of Thrones level cast of characters and betrayals. And I actually did a video of this. It's on the Blue Am channel right now. Over 200,000 views right now, talking about how the entire Republican infrastructure has now turned on Marjorie Taylor Greene. Everybody hates Marjorie. Everybody is knifing Marjorie Taylor Greene. Donald Trump hates Marjorie. The right wing, including the Freedom Caucus, they've booted Marjorie. They hate Marjorie. Ken Buck called her Moscow Marjorie for repeating Kremlin talking points. He's not wrong about this, people. Nonetheless, Mike Johnson, who is a Dominion Christianist. He's like some kind of a right wing. He literally believes the earth was created 6,000 years ago. He is as right wing a right winger as you can ever find, is somehow flipping things on its head, and he's going to try to pass Ukraine aid. Alicia, you embody absolutely everything about today's Republican Party, right? So can you explain what's going on now? Why is Mike Johnson trying to pass this, and why is he passing Ukraine aid and Israel aid and Taiwan aid, but as four separate bills? Let's take a break. We'll be right back.
Oh, I can't speak to the four separate bills. That could just go to passability. But I will say, I think Mike Johnson is doing a very good job right now. I think he is herding the cats. I think he is negotiating. I think he is compromising. And that is what the speaker should do. That is not what Moscow Marge wants him to do. Because if one Democrat supports anything, apparently it makes the bill a traitorous to America. I don't know what the hell she's ever talking about, but I think he's doing an excellent job. And I think he said, and we mentioned this talking about the FISA Section 7, that he had changed his mind once became Speaker of the House. I think that's what's happened to him. He has access to more information, more intelligence, more data. And I think he has in the last several weeks, months, however long, as he's learned the realities of not passing aid or Israel aid or the other parts of this, I think he sees what we don't know, which is some of the intelligence and information that shows why it's needed. And a good leader will change course when they have more information. And I believe that's what he's done. I think he's doing a good job.
Can I say two things? One, what you're essentially suggesting is that what's happened to Mike Johnson is what people hoped and thought might happen to Donald Trump, that his performative antics and his insanity and whatever else, like loud circus music, is going on inside that orange domed head of his, that would all get embiggened, leveled up, matured by holding high office, and that he would start to behave himself and act like an adult. That obviously didn't happen. You're making the case that could be happening to Mike Johnson. And that lands me on the second thing I'd like to say. Oh, I hope that no one records this for posterity. I think you might be right. I think Mike Johnson's doing a good job right now. I can't believe I said that. Oh my gosh, Paul, help me. Help me.
So this has nothing to do with Mike Johnson becoming a better human and a more, more rational politician. This is venal, plain old politics at work. The Republicans have seen the public complete blowback about their insane refusal to stand up to Putin. They have seen that their polls are dropping, that people are aghast at what has become of the Republican Party under Donald Trump and his MAGA acolytes who just want to bow down and lick the boots of authority like Trump and Putin. And as a result, people like Mike Johnson have slowly begun to try to modify their positions, to say, oh, now we're doing the right thing. We have the Republican from Ohio, is it Mike Turner, head of the Intelligence Committee, just going on MSNBC this morning, just before we recorded this show, sounding absolutely rational about aid to Ukraine. Unbelievably rational, saying it had to happen. We had to stand up to Putin. So the public's reaction has begun to turn the screws. Marjorie Taylor Greene's reciting Russian propaganda about denazifying Ukraine, that's what Russia was after, may have been one of the most visible examples of the insanity that has gripped the Republican Party about this. And I think that it's just politics, people. Michael Johnson tomorrow will be down in Mar-a-Lago licking the boots of his fearless leader who's on trial in New York. So maybe he has to go to the courtroom and wait outside and kneel on the sidewalks of New York to lick Trump's boots.
So
say,
I
beg for forgiveness.
First of all,
Donald,
we have to all agree it's politics. Yeah, we all have to agree that boots is the best possible ending of your last sentence, Paul. And second of all, go ahead, Alicia, because I think you and I are about to say something similar.
I don't think it's all politics, because what you referenced, this MAGA sycophancy for Russia for some reason and all these other crazy things, has been going on for several years. When Mike Johnson took over, he too was opposed to Ukraine aid. He too was opposed to FISA 702. He too was opposed to several things. He too wanted X plan on immigration, not B plan. it's in the last, he's only been there 6 months, and it's in the last 2 months that he has started to turn the tide on some of this and work with Democrats to negotiate and compromise, as is should be done in that position. So I think if it were pure politics, the polls have shown for years where the American public stands on these issues. They haven't changed. They've been opposed to the MAGA wing by the vast majority. So what would have happened in the last 5 days to change that with, from a strategic standpoint of doing what the people want? Nothing. I think it's just been sitting around for way too long.
I'm going to try to come in like the centrist I am with a Solomon-like compromise between your two views, which means I'm going to try to cut Paul in half. I think that Alicia has a point that Mike Johnson is doing the right thing currently. And I want to give him credit for that out of a sense of intellectual consistency. Ken Buck, who was one of 126 Republicans who signed on to the amicus brief to try to overturn the election and then flipped this way and that, whatever. I want to give him credit for calling Marjorie Taylor Greene Moscow Marjorie. You're doing the right thing right now, Ken. So when people do the right thing, I give them credit. I also think that Paul isn't wrong that politics is a factor in all of this here. For example, I don't think for a moment that Donald Trump has somehow had the scales fall from his eyes, seen the light, and has now turned on Vladimir Putin. He just doesn't want, he's not really lining up for the Ukraine aid bill. What he doesn't want is another motion to vacate and more chaos in the House, because he can read polling numbers and he knows that all of that nihilism and chaos is bad for Republicans and it hurts them in the polls. That's all he wants, is things to be quiet on that front. And so, again, Paul, I think you're right. I think that's politics. I think that's a major incentive here. My compromise proposal to both of you is you're both right. And on that, I just want to hit one delightful little angle of this. Alicia, alert viewer and reader, Alicia, brought this to our attention. Donald Trump has begun to ask other candidates who are fundraising if they use his name or likeness, no, not ask, I'm sorry, demand that those candidates who use his name, image, and likeness give him at least 5% of the proceeds to his campaign.
The license
Tender
fee.
Unto Caesar.
It's a it's just a license fee. What's wrong with that? I do it all the time.
If you don't take the taste, you're suspect.
You want to have a Trump building, you got to pay a license fee. You want to use my image, you pay a license fee for the hair and the look.
That's not bad. It's not as good as your Bernie Sanders, but you're getting there. You really are.
What likeness of Trump to show what a lunatic he is, because you're a Democrat running against a Trumper.
License
are the Democrats?
Fee. Pay me a license fee.
You know what?
Care.
That's a fascinating idea. What if you offer Donald Trump, I'm going to use your picture and I'm going to put one of those red stamp things over it that says deranged dipshit. And I'm going to raise money. For every $100 I raise, I'm going to give you $5. Would he take that deal?
Absolutely. He's only doing all this to raise money and save his own hide. We all know it. I just think it was very mob-like that he's doing it. And Paul, aren't there rules? Once your image is in the public domain, do you have to pay someone to use it? He was president of the United States.
You can't imply, there are FEC, at Federal Election Commission, rules against implying an endorsement where it doesn't exist. And Republicans have gotten into trouble. I think what he's really doing is he's really exerting not a legal lever here. It's more of a, hey, you're screwed inside the Republican Party if you run afoul of me. So if you imply an endorsement or that I'm somehow aligned with you here and I haven't done it, or if you do it with my permission, you're in trouble. You've got to, if you do it with my permission, pay me. If you do it without my permission, I'm going to get you.
So he's selling his endorsement.
Yeah, that's the idea. He's selling his name, image, and oh wait, has there ever been an instance before where Trump put his name on a dog shit product? Think of what that might be. Trump University.
Okay.
Trump steaks,
Bible.
Trump water, Trump Bible. There's a Trump coin.
Trump Bible.
Trump,
oh yeah.
Proof Trump Bible.
I love the hawking of the Trump gold coin, because when you look, they basically charge you what a gold coin would cost, but if you look at it, it's just gold plated.
Do you remember the Trump superhero NFT?
Oh gosh, yeah, I forgot about those.
Yeah, that was really with that muscular
body. And they sold out.
Oh yeah, there's a sucker born every minute. Look,
like the ones that got stock in Truth Social, that's now plummeting.
Speaking of Republicans, being so loathsome that they're causing their own ranks to flee. It's time for our closing segment, still yet to be named and sponsored. Hey, how about Trump sponsor it? How about that? Then we'll have to give him 5%.
Now, let's play some circus music.
This week's closing story, which, by the way, it doesn't sound at first like there's a political tie-in, but there's a little bit of one. It's a headline, Elephant Escapes Circus. Wanders through Montana traffic. An elephant escaped from a traveling circus in Montana and went wandering through traffic in Butte. That is the correct pronunciation of that town. The female elephant named Viola escaped from the Jordan World Circus on Tuesday and went walking down the middle of Harrison Avenue amid heavy traffic. So obviously, Republicans might have their ears flap and perk up at the idea of their symbol, their avatar, deciding, I've had enough with this circus. I'm outie.
This elephant was on her way to join Marjorie Taylor Greene. She's on her way to Washington, D.C. She's the newest member of the House caucus. She's going to be adopted as a mascot, given a vote, and will now stand in for Marjorie Taylor Greene, who will simply turn to the
Go the other way with it.
I think the other way. Viola was leaving the circus. I am Viola. I am an elephant who needs to leave the circus. But I was cheering on Viola as she's trotting through. Also why I don't believe that elephants should ever be used in circuses or be in caged animals, by the way. That's just a side note. But I am Viola. That could be my
next week's headline. Okay, postcard from the future. Rhino escapes Republican Party, seen wandering in downtown Manchester, looking for souvlaki. All right, Alicia, it is a zoo out there in your party. It's a circus, it's a zoo, it's a menagerie of exotic animals. And as always, you're welcome to take refuge in my basement. On that delightful note, for Paul and Alicia, Matt Robeson, we will see you next time.